We're up to the third one of these. And since it is the third one of these, we've said a lot of what we can need to say. But, you know, enjoy the summer, man. My feet are up. I'm drinking a cold drink. I'm relaxing, chillaxing, and doing what I do. Also, just, you know, because you're my fans, tune over to Required Reading now and again if you need a summer reading recommendation. And I don't need to speak out of turn, but I'm working on a new podcasting project that's completely different. It's history-based, and maybe if you're interested, maybe if you're good, I'll give you a trailer coming up soon. Thanks, everyone.
Welcome to Myopia Defend Your Childhood. This week, well, I guess right now, we are talking about this month's Patreon episode. Thanks for those of you who have been listening, because that means you're on episode 3 of our Patreon series on the Alien series. We're recording this when it's cold, so I sound like I have most of a xenomorph up my nose. I apologize, but it's okay. Eventually the whiskey will kick in and I'll sound more like this.
Oh my.
Charles S. Dutton here, baby. We got this movie. And I'm going to hit the Jesus out of that thing.
He's going to give us a spiritual re-education with a pipe.
There we go.
Yes, please.
I'm going to lay
much like the priest did throughout the latter half of the 20th century.
That's right. We're going to lay some pipe in this movie. The sexiest of all. I'm going to get this wrong every time. And Dan, you're going to throw things at me when I say it's a Fincher movie.
Nicely done.
Nailed it.
First time all night. You've gotten that right.
So this week, on panel, me, Nick Hoffman, host of Myopia Defend Your Childhood and riffer on Cineprov, and on panel we have
fantasy author Matthew W. Quinn. If you haven't checked out my novel Battle for the Wastelands, that would be much appreciated.
This is Rumor Control. Here are the facts. This is Daniel, occasional contributor to PopDose.com.
And Steve-O's here.
Wow, so Daniel just turned into most of the cast of this movie.
Yeah. Pretty much. All of the cast of this movie.
Yeah, the entire cast.
Number 80 through 85, and then the other numbers that make up math.
So the people listening to this already know what we're doing, right?
Well, I mean, and this one is, again, a reinvigoration of the same theme. There's xenomorphs a-coming, and this time we have a prophet, a herald of doom, like in the character of Ripley, who has become our beloved Sigourney Weaver. At this point is the fourth movie of hers we've done, I guess, since we started with Ghostbusters 2.
Oh, yeah, good
and,
point.
And she's grown upon us.
She has. She's a handsome lady. One of extreme importance.
And the only one with a jawline in the entire film.
Yeah, and the only one with a pair of balls in the whole film, too.
Right? This is Shawshank Redemption if an alien showed up. Like, this is so many other movies, but with a xenomorph, and it's kind of great.
It was the chamber drama Mad Max, but way less interesting.
Yeah, at different points this movie, I was getting Mad Max vibes, Dune vibes.
There's not a single straight shot the whole time. Everything's at weird Dutch angles. It's almost a film noir. With sepia tone.
What if we did a whole movie with Dutch angles and fire? Which one do you want more of?
What if David never sobered up the whole movie?
Yeah.
Just stumbling down a hallway.
And various interchangeable angry bald men.
Yeah, just put a camera on his head. Let's go. Get the footage.
Various interchangeable angry bald men. But enough about this podcast.
I don't know about you, Danny boy, but I've got my hair.
He was talking about my balls. So, Daniel, since
oh,
this
so
is,
you shaved down there, huh?
This is your fan favorite. Why don't you give us a plot synopsis of Numero 3-0?
All right.
Mad lads that found Jesus.
After aliens, after aliens, Ripley and the remainder of the crew crash land on a prison colony on Fury 161. Ripley's the only survivor, so Newt is killed, Hicks is killed, Bishop is smashed up, and actually comes back halfway through the movie. But anyway, apparently there was an alien on board the ship that they took off of, and in fact there were two alien eggs. One of them turns into a xenomorph that haunts the prison colonists on Fury 161 that they're trying to kill, and the other one has impregnated Ripley with a queen embryo. Weyland-Yutani is coming to collect Ripley and the Queen before the other alien can kill all the prisoners and kill her.
No, I mean, that's it.
That's the plot. That's the whole movie. Yeah.
Well, and this borders on being too much, and we can get to the end of this where we decide that Daniel loves this movie and the rest of us are kind of meh. But what I will say is alien movies are generally pretty good because it's a bunch of roughnecks, rednecks, you know, working class folk, and then you drop in a chaos emerald and shit goes down. And that's what this is. The thing is, we start off the bat with way too much information, which is that this is a double Y chromosome prison facility.
Double Y chromosome facility.
And after the trippiest opening, where you see what's going on in the ship, interspersed with the credits in a way that doesn't make a lot of sense.
You haven't seen that many trippy openings.
Yeah, I was going to say, this seems more like you should be humming a national anthem so that it has an extra level of weird metaphor. It's right up there with Fritz the Cat and some other dry humping bullshit.
What is Fritz the Cat?
The democratic version of that. Some of you might not know what double Y chromosome is. It's been a while since I've taken my educational development class, so I will read the first line of the Wikipedia article so we get a little bit of this, because I think it's perfectly appropriate.
Is it really lore? This isn't just bad Star Trek, like...
No, what double Y chromosome thing is a thing. Double Y chromosome syndrome is a genetic condition where the male has an extra Y chromosome. Symptoms are usually few. They may be taller than average, acne, and increased risk of learning disabilities. And I think that summarizes the entire cast, right?
Okay, so for any of you biology majors out there, the X chromosome is way bigger than the Y chromosome. Who would have guessed that it did something?
That's right. And so the fact that you have two Ys means you have an extra chromosome, a 47th, but the point of the matter is none of these men know a damn thing, and that's the learning disability part. Which
especially
is,
with 85 being the assistant warden.
He's 85 because he has
an 85 IQ.
That's right.
Hey.
And these are roughnecks who look out like rejects from Brazil. They even have the giant bills to the cap flipped up, and it's a lot of extra horse shit.
Yeah, they come to a planet where it's like a prison where everyone's left except for about 25 guys who form like the world's angriest monastery.
Yeah, it's like a really shitty Australia. It's great. Yeah, it's really interesting concept.
And they're all cranky and they don't want Ripley around because he's disrupting their harmony.
Yeah, exactly. She's bringing way too many X chromosomes to the party. We can't have this.
Well, and as you alluded to, it's in Australia, so it's just filled with rapists, child murderers. Like, it's just... Well, it's a Rouge's gallery.
And the doctor that can't get a job anywhere else.
Charles Dance, by the way, later of Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Tywin Lannister is younger and less obnoxious.
Well, I guess this is a land of too many Chucks. I mean, again, though, everything else is right out of Stephen King, right? In fact, this is effectively Stephen King in space. They're all in a prison colony. The asshole prison warden, it's right out of Shawshank, which is the same year, 92?
Shawshank was 94, so okay, so years later.
Morgan Freeman, the xenomorph crawled through 500 yards of bullshit to get to the end of this movie.
Well, no, it didn't, because it dies before the end of this movie.
There are 10 miles of tubes in this movie.
Spoiler alert, the xenomorph dies.
Spoilers, we kill
him. Oh, no, you mean this isn't the one where he ends with the musical number where I guess she saves the day?
Hello, my baby. Hello, my honey. Hello, my ragtime gal.
Oh, Jesus.
That was funny. I mean, so Ripley...
believe it or not. I didn't believe it at all.
Yeah, that's the problem. No one believes her, and then people start dying.
Yeah.
That's the entire franchise.
The whole series is based around men. You should listen to women occasionally. But regardless.
There must be a tie-in there. Come on. This is a colony full of no X chromosomes. Like, God damn it. The woman's the only one that knows what's going on. Yikes.
I mean, at one point, Morse effectively says, a vagina? What?
Yeah, and then a bunch of them try and rape her, except the Dylan, the lead preacher inmate, proceeds to give them some spiritual re-education with a pipe.
I was positive you were going to say incel from...
God. No, the rest of them, yeah, probably.
Yeah, Dylan's all about percussive re-education. for sure.
Charles S. Dutton's
gonna bring you back to Jesus with a pipe.
Absolutely. What a man. One of three characters in this whole film, by the way.
Yeah, no, this movie is lack of any character.
Ripley, the Doctor, Dylan, the rest seem to be interchangeable angry bald men.
They're literally numbers. We don't give a shit. That's the point.
Well, and at one point, as they're dying, Charlie S. Dutton is giving them names. You're like, Gregor! I'm like, who the fuck
is Gregor? If it wasn't for the subtitles, I wouldn't know anyone's name. Gregor screaming, oh no, they got Gregor! Which number was he?
Indecipherable.
He was the extra greasy one.
All right. I mean, and again, there's a lice outbreak, so they all have shaved heads, as we understand.
And there's that bit, though, when Charles Stance is explaining that, where he's like, okay, I'll give you some clippers later, Ripley, so you can take care of your private area.
Yeah.
So, I'm sorry, I'm dense. Was there a sub-theme there with the lice? I get that they appeared a couple of times, but they're like, that never tied that loose end?
They're in a concentration camp in space, so yeah, lice.
Well, no.
I get it, but they didn't add anything. Like, what was the end game?
The fake out when they smash open the pipe and it's full of bugs. Maybe those are too big for lice.
Dude, you're fucking talking over the actual metaphor.
Tell me the metaphor. Tell my dumb ass the metaphor.
They're all castrated men and a woman who looks the same of them, a flat-chested, bald-headed woman, is more masculine than the rest of them. It's literally feminism 101. It's that gender doesn't matter. That's all it is. And it takes so much leg room to get there because they do the same thing in the first movie. She's the second mate. No one listens to her. She's right the whole time. It happens here. They just have to de-gender her there.
She is the man in this movie. Let me tell you, my favorite scene, I think, in the whole movie upon reflection is when she is talking to Dylan for the first time and he says something like, I'm a rapist and a whatever, blah, blah, blah.
I'm a murderer and a rapist of women.
You don't want to know me. And Ripley says, I must make you really nervous then. And sits down. Like, I love
that. Dude, she puts her dick on the table.
Yeah, she just flopped that shit right out and sat down. I love it.
You laughed at me earlier when you suggested
Many reasons.
Yes, yes. When you suggested that this would end with me liking the movie and everybody else wanting to destroy me. That's what Ripley's supposed to be, though. I mean, in Aliens, it's all about her embracing her...
motherhood.
Yeah,
yeah.
No, basically.
You're right.
But that
You're right.
That was never supposed to be what the character was, though.
No, I will say the second one is Jim Cameron talking about, you know what's important about women? Throwing jewelry off the edge of a ship when the world is ending. Yeah. I mean, we'll do Titanic, but you'll have to pay us to do it. Patreon.
You'll have to pay
Fuck
us
you.
To do that.
I'll watch the second half of Titanic. Can I get away with doing that?
You know what? It should be a power hour. We'll drink for 6 hours straight and then die at the end.
Oh, yeah.
We'll sink the podcast as the ship is going down.
There's a penny whistle solo that starts up in the background.
Iceberg of money off his port bow.
No, good lord.
Patreon.
Ice Cube. Ice Cube, not an iceberg. Ice Cube.
The three of
How
us.
How about iced tea?
The three of us can do a power hour. Matt can have like a white wine spritzer, and we'll just see. We'll end up at the same point at the end.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't need to give Matt that because then he's going to wake up in Vegas with a new wife.
Simpsons I feel a song coming on.
No, Simpsons did it.
Simpsons joke.
Simpsons did it. So after she's integrated into the crew, we haven't even mentioned that Newt's just fucking dead at the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they do totally. Pay that off with Ripley mourning her. It's
good
very...
riddance. Good riddance.
She almost gets Spock's death at the end of Wrath of Khan, but doesn't because they throw her into hell, literally a fire pit. It'd be great if the fourth movie was instead of Event Horizon and they have to fight the corpses as they go into hell.
Oh no.
Now you're talking about Ripley there because Newt's just dead in the cryo.
Well, right, but they throw her into a fire core. I don't know what this thing is. I guess it's supposed to be a blast furnace for the lead that they're mining off this
yeah,
rock.
To melt the lead. It's a foundry essentially.
Right. By the way, this is a better Doom movie than the Rock movie, right?
Yeah.
Did you see
Doom movie?
Yeah.
I saw the Doom movie. No, well, so the distinction is that the Doom movie did the first person perspective kind of correctly. This one was just a drunken nightmare. Well, that, like, let's just invert the camera and increase the speed by 50%, and the audience is going to fucking love it.
Because that was the alien's POV.
Yes, but it looked like a clip.
I don't want to be an alien.
This looks like a clip from Nickelodeon's The Tomorrow People or something.
They put plungers on a dog, and they're just like, go! Put the camera, get the GoPro on him and go! It was confusing and awful.
But tragically, back then, it weighed 63 pounds, and they had to put the dog down at the end of every shot.
Oh, foreshadowing.
There was no PETA message over these. I mean, there may have been. We didn't bother to watch the credits. But there could. There may not have been.
No xenomorphs were harmed in the making of this film.
Yeah, except for the one. But only one. Well, I'll take one.
Two.
They went inside a Planet Hollywood and just blew up the shit. You know, you just call them the aliens. They'll actually fly there, the xenomorphs. No, they're just the aliens. You know, we're going to blow one up from a movie, and then we're going to put it in the Planet Hollywood. This is going to be great.
I'm going to punch it. I'm going to go the distance.
So stay tuned with for Rocky xenomorph.
Alien, yeah.
You know, you can order your cheese like noodles, like the appetizer, directly from the xenomorph. It'll go, and then you say into the mouth, you know, that I want the potato, the stuffed potato skins, and you'd be like, hey, it's just potato skins.
The best. Unlimited.
I got back into shape by punching the xenomorph hanging from the meat locker.
Well, that's the ox that was supposed to be in the meat locker, and that's where the alien was supposed to come from.
Oh, my God. Now, for those of you who don't know Daniel, I love the guy. You know, I was the best man at his third wedding. here's the thing. He's going to tell you the movie that could have been. I'm going to tell you the movie that was. And the movie that was a cult movie where you drop a xenomorph into Jonestown and he beats the Flavor Aid.
I want to hear about the movie that could have been, though. The movie I like to kind of compare this to is the first Hellraiser, where someone had a really cool idea, and they got three quarters of the way through it and went, oh shit, this needs to be a movie? We better get a plot in this son of a bitch real quick.
There were like four or five different Alien 3s that were circulating around before it actually got made. So this was kind of an amalgamation of all those random ideas. Like, originally it was supposed to just be a monastery instead of a prison.
But it's so cool conceptually, but you just like... But why? It's so niche and weird, and I love it, and I hate it. I mostly hate it, but I kind of love it.
Maybe they didn't have the money for another version of Aliens, so they went back to the original formula. You know, kill off half the cast and claustrophobia.
That's a terribly pragmatic perspective. I don't agree with it.
Well, I think it's only bought out by the fact that this is a relatively new director.
David Fincher, this was his first feature. He was already like a well-known music video director.
Well, right, but the first one is Ridley Scott, and the second one is Jim Cameron, and they were bigger than that.
Were they really? Because Ridley Scott had just, I think his first movie was like 2 years before Alien, and he was more well-known for commercials, and then...
Jim Cameron had already done Abyss.
No, he hadn't.
Oh, really? I thought, well...
He had done two things before Aliens, and that was Terminator, which...
Masterpiece.
Right, and Piranha 2.
Not a master.
As a full director?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Regardless, I don't think this is bad, but we should get further. We should get further in this movie. Well, after banging the doctor, as you do the first time you meet a doctor, he injects her a second time with something, and then, oh no, a xenomorph! The xenomorph comes out of a dog. The only other thing we have on this vessel, which I guess is an allusion to the first Alien movie where there's a cat. Everyone likes to have a pet, and this pet turns from Rottweiler into corpse.
Yeah.
As we see a scene we already alluded to, which is Ridley being introduced to the...
You mean Ripley.
Whatever, the director is being introduced.
It might be Metroid, it's fine, don't worry about it.
Yeah, giant Sigourney is being introduced to the rest of the cast.
Well, Sigourney Weaver's as tall as Samus Aran, it might work.
What's up?
Dude, a Samus movie? Oh, girl.
Girl.
Although, tragically now, she'd have to be played by, like, who?
Captain Marvel?
Elizabeth Debicki, maybe?
Yeah.
I have no
idea. Nintendo should be making movies other than, well, no, garbage. They've never made a good movie. Super Mario Brothers is great. I'm not going to lie.
The live action one?
Yeah.
Hell yeah. I love that movie. God damn.
I mean, if you guys want to hear us talk about it, God, that's second season, first season.
Okay, let's, for real, let's talk about Mad Max reimaginations. That is the Super Mario Brothers. Okay, I'm getting on a tangent.
Mario Kart, no.
I love that movie.
Mario Kart Fury Road.
That's right. Oh, my God.
Bowsette is just forced into lactating forever. And
oh,
while Luigi is there, just scarred all over, trying to fight.
So who's driving? Who's the dude hanging from the speakers then?
Donkey Kong, right? With the Donkey Kong drum game. Dung da dung da dung dung da dung da dung da dung da dung da dung dung da dung da dung dung.
Little known fact: this entire podcast was edited with the drums from that game. So kudos to our editor, please.
I'm sorry, Daniel, that it's going to be very hard to edit it out with only drums.
Look, this is a man with skills that pay bills, all right?
Really? Mad skills.
Oh, my God. And then Morton Bowser is there.
Well, that explains why he's always trying to kidnap the princess. That's he's right. Horny, gross old man.
Oh, God. Fury Road is a stay tuned. It's such a good episode.
So would you like to talk about the movie we watched? Yes.
Not even a little bit. Not even a skosh.
Well, I mean, a big part of the thing is Ripley's just kind of embracing, first of all, her true identity as like a fuck off, I'm the only one who knows what's going on figure. There's still moments, though, where she's the vulnerable one, which... I don't mean that as an insult, but that's kind of what you need in an alien movie is that level of suspense.
No. But you're right. It's an interesting concept of she is the only one that knows what's going on, but she is the vulnerable one because she's the only woman in a penal colony of 25 dudes that kind of have found Jesus and also have lead pipes everywhere. So
it's a very negative view of the fact that people find Jesus.
Yeah.
It's a very...
Again, that's the whole thing about Alien is the first one was real cynical about how the working class was treated by growing corporations.
No, I think it is a myth-busting series. No, but everything about it is there's every cliche in the world. These people are loyal to a blank and shit falls apart. Doesn't matter if it's a corporation, a religion, a gender stereotype. It's that in a human situation, people act like people, and some rise to the bottom, some sink, and that's why generally, and I'm not saying this is a fault against this movie, because it's not, but in the other Alien movies, the first two specifically, there are female characters, and some rise to the occasion, and some don't. There are male characters, some rise to the occasion, some don't. People are able to move above their class and station, some aren't. And it's not based on who they are. It's based on individualism.
It's based on who they are, in other words.
Right.
Right.
The captain isn't the most leaderly. It's who can lead, right?
You're right. And it's kind of, I think it kind of solidifies that point that a lot of the deaths of notable characters in this movie are very sudden. And you have to fill those voids very quickly. Yeah. And they don't do that successfully, which is... Yeah, please.
Like Ripley takes over just because everyone gets killed by the xenomorph in about 5 minutes. The doctor.
Ripley doesn't want to take over, though, but she acknowledges that no one here has the balls or the cognitive capacity to do anything.
All that lead in their findery.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, because the doctor's dead, the warden's dead, the warden's right hand is a moron, so. Who's left?
85.
No one. And that was kind of my main gripe with this movie is that we established three characters worth of shit, and then they're all dead suddenly.
They're cannon fodder.
And then there's nothing. There's nothing left in this film except for we need to kill the queen, and there's this kind of imminent pressure.
And I will agree with Steve, despite him. No,
fuck that guy.
Because... How do I put this? The first one is effectively a horror movie in space, right? It's very like, you know, I'm going to get naked and take a shower. Like, it's right down there with Friday the 13th. The problem is, I mean, it's a low-budget sci-fi horror, but it doesn't matter. Everyone's kind of on equal footing, and then Sigourney's the last girl. Fine. This one wants to give way too much backstory to that. That's not against it, per se. It just, you either simplify it, make it more complex, but this is like, I'm going to make it complex. None of it matters, though. Here's the thing. This guy with a head scar, he's going to be the last survivor. Morse is the last girl. It's adorable. He's the asshole the whole time, but he just needed better tits.
It just doesn't matter. I would have preferred the simpler approach, and I had this objection during the film that they wanted, and this is the Hellraiser comparison.
Right.
It's this like big, robust plot that like gets some people really interested, but then nothing happens. Like, I don't give a shit. If you're not going to tell me a story, I want more aliens. I want a lot more aliens, and they just weren't in this. And the lore wasn't compelling enough to like the doctor had a very intriguing, enigmatic backstory, but then he just gets stabbed through the head, and who gives a shit? Like, it's just over. That arc is done.
Yeah, I mean, and to me, the problem seemed to be they had actors for X amount of days except for Sigourney and then nothings, right? And so, like, the doctor was intriguing, but he's really in, like, four scenes. And then he dies.
So this was like the 1992 version of This Is the End, where they're like, we've got all these big name actors for one day. You better make it happen because they're gone tomorrow.
Kind of. Yeah. I mean, and that's what it is. Because, like, you know, the warden is someone I've almost heard of. And you're just like, oh no!
Right? Yeah, one of the angry bald men is Pete Postlethwaite.
Which one? You're gonna need to be more specific.
The guy with the with the dimple jawline that you like. You wonder if he was a war veteran or a POW.
Yeah, you're gonna need to be more specific.
He was the one who shot. Oh, here's the thing. In Lost World, he goes, "I want to get a T-Rex a mile."
A mile.
Because he had father issues, I guess, and he just wanted to shoot the biggest penis he'd ever seen. Check an episode that we recorded 7 years ago. Pete Postlethwaite is in this. But yeah, like, unless someone had a weird scar. Frankly, the thing about this, it was almost cast by, like, a Tim Burton person, because you're just like, you have a weird face. Can you be in my movie?
Everybody, but that's the thing. That was the thing that unified. Everyone had a weird backstory, but in this world, it didn't matter.
Nothing mattered.
They homologized all of it. They were part of a greater collective, and in the end, none of it mattered.
None of them mattered. Like, I would have wanted...
They eventually all managed to work together and kill the xenomorph.
Well,
and most of them died in the
but
process.
All of them died.
Except for Morse.
But it is kind of interesting that they sort of had this act of selflessness, like this colony of this supposedly, it's kind of weird because they never actually show.
You asshole.
They never show any atrocities
of
these men.
Well, they try.
But they imply it.
No.
Okay, other than the weird rape scene. But
you nailed it.
Yeah.
It's a colony. They're ants in a colony.
A little bit.
And they're all the same. They all work together at the end.
So is Ripley the
Steve? You fucking broke the. We've cracked it.
So
they're
is
totally
Ripley the queen
the
then?
Yes.
Well, yeah, she is. Absolutely, she is.
Because she's got queen on the brain,
figuratively and
and in the heart,
girl.
And in chest, more specifically.
Can we watch a better chamber drama in space? Dracula 3000.
Anybody? Oh no!
Sounds like we do if we lose. That sounds like what we do if we lose a bet.
What's the bet I can lose?
Yeah, absolutely.
I hate you.
And then compared to Dracula in Brooklyn, or no, a Vampire in Brooklyn.
Well, we could do a Bram Stoker's Dracula at some point.
We've talked about that before, and I'm sure it's going to happen someday.
Yeah, and then what is it? What's the equivalent? It's like Mary, the Frankenstein.
Yeah, yeah, it's Mary Shelley's
Mary
Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that Robert De Niro?
I think it's the monster, yeah.
Are those unhappy noises or happy noises?
Unhappy, because the only Frankenstein movie you should be watching is Young
Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Bride of Frankenstein is great.
Yeah, but not for this show.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, but it doesn't have Gene Wilder, so it's okay.
I mean, he's not wrong, unless... Oh, unless. I don't know. I mean, so what we need to get to, I would assume...
Well, the biggest thing about this movie is the fact that it actually exists at all, because for a while, this was one of the most troubled productions in Hollywood. There were, like...
Was it a blacklist?
Not quite like that, but it was one of those
Did
things.
Did people read the script and they were just like,
"Were they
do this.
Banned? Were they? Did they have to go to like Mexico in some dumpster?"
There's a lot of blank pages on here.
It's like there's no script at all.
You just drew a flip book. We're not going to produce this shit.
There's nothing at all. It's nothing at all.
Good reference to David Fincher's The Game. There, by the way, the dumpster in Mexico. Thank you.
Yeah. It's not an episode. It's one of the greatest movies.
Alien 3, though, had like 4 or 5 different scripts that they all just sort of combined together and gave it to David Fincher. And at that point, he was like a very famous music video director.
Like the most recent Star Wars movie.
Or Lost Boys. It looked like a music video.
In all seriousness, like that, I think Madonna's Vogue video was something that he directed.
No shit.
I'm pretty sure.
Did he also direct the book just called Sex?
I'm sure he had his hand in that.
David Fincher's Sex.
Chapter 1, It Happened.
Xenomorph!
Right?
It was one of the things where the studio thought, oh, well, he's just a music video director, so we can just basically dictate what he should do. And he was like, well, no, I don't want to do that when they hired him. So it led to all sorts of problems when it actually came down to filming.
There was seven cinema sins. He made me fuck her, he said, as he filmed that cinema sin.
God. Okay, so, but... What's
in the box, Ripley? What's in the box?
Was this a botched production, or was it just a boring movie?
I think boring movie.
I will say option B.
You thought Alien versus Predator was exciting.
Yeah, it was exciting. This is just clunky and slow.
I actually prefer this much more to Alien versus Predator.
Thank you.
Versus Vacuum versus Roomba.
Sure.
But I will say, this stank to me of... I have an alien movie, but what if it was a xenomorph instead of any other alien?
Sure.
Is Sigourney Weaver available? Because at times, it looked like they were filming this as though it was a sequel to Brazil, the Terry Gilliam movie, which is a masterpiece, which we will never do because it's a masterpiece. At times, it looked almost as though you could have spliced in Marvin the Martian, then it would have been the same. Uh-huh. At times, you could have filmed this for Sci-Fi Channel because there weren't that many special effects until the whole thing became a CGI GIF running through the hallway.
Early 90s CGI, which is ugly.
Give me one damn... There was only one alien. Make a goddamn puppet.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, frankly, the whole building looked like that... what is that? It's like that Prison Break movie with Sylvester Stallone and Arnold Schwarzenegger. You know what I'm talking about? It came out like 5 years ago.
Escape Plan?
That's the one. It's just like sci-fi prison. And it's supposed to be a mining colony in Mars. This is 92. The Doom video game had came out. This is literally what it is.
I'm pretty sure that came out the year after, but I see your point. Doom came out in 93, didn't it?
Maybe. I thought the shareware came out earlier, but whatever.
Possibly.
Like, but regardless... It feels like a bad video game. We never see the surface. It doesn't matter that it's actually even in space. Like, we did AVP months ago at this point.
That's the whole thing about the first Alien, though, is that it's almost irrelevant that it took place in space because it was basically a haunted house movie.
Yes, but. The first one is supposed to be There's No Way Out. Here, world arrives to it. It feels more like an X-Files something. It's a race against time before the government gets it. And that has to do with the second movie with Paul Reiser being one of the greatest villains ever. He's mad about aliens.
Oh, boy. So he lasted all of 2 episodes before he got canceled?
Mad About You lasted longer. You have
the Paul Reiser show lasted, I think, 2 or 3 episodes. And
you have whiplash about something else.
Oh, boy.
Hey! Illusions. References.
Foreshadowing.
Girl! Well, so.
The thing about Alien, though, the first one especially, is that it's very nihilistic.
Go on.
keep drinking there, Nick.
I'll need to.
It's all about how humans are commodities and how they're ultimately powerless against bigger monoliths, and the only rebellious action they can do is to survive what's thrown at them, which Aliens didn't really have. It was much more positive about its characters, especially because they were all Marines, right? Aliens is very much a product of its time, which was, you know, the ultra-conservative 1980s.
I will correct you only briefly.
Okay.
Not because I hate you, but because...
But because hoorah, motherfucker.
Yeah, right.
But when this was made, H.W. was president, so a kinder, gentler alien.
Yeah. No, I will agree with Daniel.
Well, we can
across
end
the
a
board.
War in one day.
Right. Well, we'll be able to we'll win something eventually, Bar, if we give the poor people heroin. I will say you're right, but it's the spirit of humanity against all odds. So the first one is the individual against horror. The second one is the individual above everything, including the military, because it's America. We're better than... We, as the democratic life force, are better than the military-industrial complex, which is the second one, especially when it's corrupted by corporations.
More specifically, to keep in mind the industrial complex part, because the Marines in the second one are well-rounded characters, and it's there's an emotional impact when they die.
Well, and all of these are anti-capitalist corporate movies.
Yeah.
And this one, we have the 13th Amendment, right? You can be a free person unless you've committed a crime, and then you're forced into slavery, and that slavery has been sold to a corporation, which is Yutani. And the only people who can save you is another corporation. Oh, wait, they're more corrupt, and they're willing to sacrifice your lives. Right? The theme is there. It's an anti-capitalist theme the whole way across. And then the ladies will save the day because corporations are run by men in all of these.
Well, in this case, it's apparently Bishop that runs whatever's going on at the end. Is that supposed to be a robot copy?
They don't say so. He says he's not, but then they crack his ear off. There's no blood, and his ear is down by his chin.
The 85, the guard who just wants to go home, at one point just brains him with a club. We'll call him a fucking android.
And he is. His ear ends up by his lower lip down here. And there's no blood, so I assume it's an android.
But
right?
He promised us he wasn't. He lied.
Are you going to say corporations are going to lie to people while risking their lives?
That's so sad.
I have some Red 5 to sell you that's probably anthrax.
Yeah, right?
Right. These movies are so anti-capitalist. It's amazing.
I actually did like that scene because it was kind of, it wasn't subtle, but it kind of was, where he's got like an ear dislocated and he's like, no, but Ridley, I'm not a Ripley or whoever the fuck you are.
But he throws up his hands and he's like, think of the implications. And you're just like, implications.
Yeah, he did a 180 real quick. We're gonna help you. We want the alien. We won't kill you. I mean, don't jump in the lava. It'll be fine.
You jumped in the lava,
Ripley. Ah, you bitch.
Even though you already heard this, but like, even though in 2004, which is 172 years before this, apparently they figured out there were aliens. So whoop. That fucking Alien versus Predator is garbage. I'm sorry, guys.
No, it sure is.
We should talk about, I guess, the end of this movie when they're trying to lock off the hallways and we get the alien perspective for the first time.
The alien POV shots, yeah, which is great. It's running not just towards its prey, but like running up against the walls and on top of the ceiling.
It's like a bad 1992 like driving game, like where you're like, we can go around the two, right? It's like Mega Race or something.
Well, at the end of that level is a Chaos Emerald. So, and if you get all seven of them, you get to beat Sonic 2 as Super Sonic.
Okay, so for any of you that saw this around its release, was this gimmicky? Was it interesting?
Oh, when this was originally released, people were mad about it.
Because this was kind of the Doom thing, right? The rock version of the Doom, where like the first person perspective was the gimmick that brought people into the theaters. Is this something they advertised?
Well, the trailer made it look a lot more action-packed than the movie really is.
Right, but it was a chamber drama. You're right. It wasn't very action-packed.
Well, it's a chamber drama that has to deal a lot with religious themes and things that I know Jim Cameron would never touch. But they hit all that in the marketing. So it looked like another action movie.
Do you think that was like intentionally there just for the marketing? Because those scenes were very disorienting and added nothing to the film from my perspective as someone who had not seen it before.
I don't know if those particular shots were added because somebody in marketing said we need them, but probably when they were filming that and putting it together, it's like, okay, this is what we can use to sell the movie.
It's an interesting point. You get to you review the movie and you go, wow, boy, this trailer is spice it up a little bit? This is not really doing it for me. Because I'm reviewing the scenes in my head, and if I take out those weird first-person scenes, it's kind of like, what's your trailer? It's just a bunch of sweaty dudes, like, There's not a lot else going on.
You're not wrong. There's a lot that's weird about these prisoner characters. I get what they were trying to do by having them all be evangelical Christians and doomsday cultists, but I'm not sure if it really was all that effective with just who the characters were.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it adds another layer of intrigue, but...
It does, but it never builds up to anything. I mean, back when the Alien Quadrilogy set was a thing where all of these movies had like two distinct cuts, they actually went into a little more depth in Alien 3 with one of the characters and how he viewed the alien as an actual god, or at least an actual demon or something.
Which one? The Gorik, the one who kept rambling about the dragon?
Golik, yeah.
I think that would have actually made a very compelling plot point if half the prisoners just decided, let's worship this thing. How cool would that be?
He does, and they've almost got it trapped, but then Golik lets it out of the trap.
Right.
If I recall correctly.
Because we're talking about this.
Go on.
Alien 3. Do you want to guess where it made the top 20 in 1992?
Where?
Financial profits domestically.
Oh, you said domestically, so that would be in the U.S.,
where? Like, yeah, did it region? Rank?
Where did it rank in the top 20 domestically in 1992?
Where did it rank? In the top 20. It's in the top 20. It's number 20. It's got to be.
Oh, where in the top 20? Because it was a huge hit, I think, overseas. 7 or 8?
It did not make the top 20 domestically.
Yeah. You led me astray, you bastard.
Aladdin made number 1.
Right.
Home Alone 2 made number 2. Batman Returns made number 3. And then the only other movie we've done, we didn't do Wayne's World. That's number 8. We did recently Patriot Games, which is number 14. We did Under Siege, which is number 13.
Where's Unforgiven?
Unforgiven is 11. The Hand That Rocks the Cradle is number 12 to fill in that gap. White Men Can't Jump is number 16.
That's a great movie.
The Crying Game is number 20. And Scent of a Woman, hoo-ha, is number 19. This movie didn't make it. Lethal Weapon 3 was number 4. Sister Act was number 5. So many good movies.
Well, it took them like 10 years to make the sequel, so that's not really a surprise.
Yeah, so what are we, like, we're like 57?
For Alien.
And internationally did okay.
I remember hearing that it was like a huge hit in Korea and China.
It was a huge hit in Uzbekistan. Loved it over there.
Yeah.
How do you think it got a fourth one?
Right, exactly.
Both of you are right. It made $104 million overseas, but that's nothing nowadays, of course. This is 92, so it made $160 million worldwide. So nice. It got a fourth one, right? That's $92. That's Lethal Weapon $3, apparently.
Yeah.
I mean, I only bring it up because this movie is just a mess in a fun way, I guess? We should give final judgments. We're there. I'm going to go to Daniel first because I think that'll go interestingly.
Go on.
Back when I was growing up, the whole line that I heard was that the first Alien was good, Aliens was great, and then after that, it all tapered off. And the third one was apparently the biggest sin that's ever been made because they kill off Hicks and Newt in the first 2 minutes. And it was a long time before I actually saw it, and when I did, I'm like, oh, this is actually a lot more interesting than people give it credit for. And I think from a thematic standpoint and from a tone standpoint, it's a lot closer to an Alien sequel than Aliens is. Now, Aliens by itself is a great action movie. Personally, I think it builds on what Aliens said a lot more effectively than Aliens did.
Steve?
Sure. I think in a much less elegant way, I agree with Dan here. It builds an interesting lore, fails to expand upon it in kind of any meaningful way, introduces some interesting characters, promptly kills them off, is kind of hampered by the fact that there's only one alien and not a whole lot of like of real impact that plays out throughout this movie. So it's like, it's not a terrible movie, but it's not a good one either. So... yeah, it's kind of got my seal of shit approval.
Matt?
I didn't really think it was that good. It's kind of ponderous and not a lot happens. And again, all these interchangeable bald guys.
Nah. Keep in mind, Matt thought Alien versus Predator was exciting.
It was more entertaining than this.
Let me rephrase my description of the movie. I would rather watch interchangeable bald guys. Please produce that. Someone?
Why, Steve, I didn't know you were into such things.
Right?
I believe that's called a Guy Ritchie movie.
Right?
First of all, as a man with all of his hair, I like to watch interchangeable bald guys die. No. I mean, my final thought on this is I enjoyed this.
Go on.
I enjoyed it more than Alien versus Predator, if only because there was no horse shit. Alien versus Predator had exposition for minutes where nothing happened. This was constantly building to something, and the violence between human beings was purely egotistical. It was like, I don't believe you. Not believing something is very human of an emotion, as opposed to, you know, ancient aliens exist. We're on the same team, but I'm explaining what's happening. That's not conflict. Conflict exists because I can't fathom the fact that there's a hockey-masked killer coming to kill virgins who might violate that virginity. Yeah, this screams of a bad character going like, so you're in the third Aliens movie. Here's how you survive the third Aliens movie. But at the same time, yeah, it's sloppy at times, but this screams of an early director, but we're going to get a young director so we can affect him. Like, you could probably make 6 edits of this. It's the goddamn Blade Runner effect, where it's someone who had a vision, and then the producers had an opinion, the studio had an opinion, and yet this movie doesn't matter, so we end up with a Ripley movie that's fine. I thought it was fine. I'm sure there's another edit, which is also fine.
The assembly cut that they put together for the quadrilogy is better than the theatrical version.
It's not that I disagree with you. It's just that I'm not going to watch 12 hours of this. I want to move to the next movie, right?
No, you don't.
But here's the thing. I didn't know that at the time. I don't disagree with your opinion, but a 108-minute movie or 109-minute movie like this is, that's okay, right? And so, I mean, in full disclosure, I've seen both of them, like Daniel's alluded to, but that's not what we're reviewing. We're reviewing the fact that there's a movie that exists, and that movie that exists is a sloppy mess. And at the end of the day, sometimes I feel like a pig in a blanket wrapped in American cheese because I'm a fat American, and that's what this movie is. This is a movie for a fat American, and A+ thumbs up.
It's a sloppy mess for fat Americans. A+ thumbs up, everyone.
Most of the cast.
But to be fair, I said the same thing about AVP because sometimes you've had a hangover so long that another sixer will do you, along with some casingles on top of some American pizza pie.
Are you on top of spaghetti all covered with cheese? Did you lose your poor meatball when somebody sneezed?
And the humor exists in the fact that Quincy here made a bad joke, and this movie involves a half dogman being raped to death because all of the murders we see the xenomorph, he's humping the person to death.
Yeah, it does kind of look like it's humping the corpses.
So between some sort of exoskeleton humpsicle, we have a horror movie where like an alien is fighting a bald woman. Please. For Christ's sake.
I need to write a story now. Exoskeletal Humpsicle.
Please visit my Bandcamp for my new death metal band, Exoskeleton Humpsicle. We've just released our first single.
It's a lot of sad incels moaning into a microphone.
All over MySpace, you guys.
Do you remember when MySpace Pete wasn't 60 years old or whatever the fuck that meme was?
Oh my God.
We're all losers. Anyway, so here's the thing about all of what we said. Next month, I guess, if you can stomach it, we're going to do Alien Resurrection, a movie which I haven't seen, I don't think.
It is...
When did that one come out?
It was 97 is when that came out, and God have mercy on us.
Yeah, so stay tuned next month when we talk about an alien movie that I didn't see the first time when I was dating someone that Daniel knowed.
That I knowed? What does that mean?
Daniel knew.
I knew later. I met this individual later.
He done
knew
this girl.
He done knew her. He done knew her. That isn't to say I need her.
We're past our expiration.
I'm done. I'm out. Bye, guys.
My Opie Defender Childhood is a product of Do Better Podcasting. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman, produced by Nick Hoffman, Daniel Suttis, and Matthew Quinn, and edited by Daniel Suttis. Our theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod from incomptech.com, licensed under Creative Commons license by Attributes and 3.0 license.